This is Here and Now, and all this week we've been talking about the issue of student debt. Yesterday we heard from Purdue University president and former Indiana governor Mitch Daniels. He said colleges can do more to rein in costs.
We have been able to manage within the available revenues without resort to the easy answer, which has always been just tax the students more.
You can hear that conversation at hereandnow.org. Today, we want to hear from two counselors about paying for college. Lisa Maselli is college counselor at my old school, the University of Illinois Laboratory High School in Urbana, Illinois. Lisa, good to have you back.
Thanks, Jeremy. Good to be here.
And Kevin Fudge is also with us. He's manager of government relations and community affairs for American Student Assistance. That's a nonprofit that helps families pay for college. Kevin, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And how much should and does cost factor into which college somebody decides to go to, Kevin?
It should be a decision that's based on, like, when students look at the academic fit for a college to see if they're academically qualified based on their academic profile, their GPA and SAT scores, they should look at a financial fit. Every family's definition of affordability is different, and everybody's level of risk, or what acceptable level of risk of how much debt they want to take on in order to pay for school is different. And so those conversations about affordability are very important, and it's important to have that knowledge before diving in and saying we're going to go to this school.
Lisa, as you talk to students, how much are they talking about the cost? How much do they think about the cost when they're trying to decide where to go to college?
It's almost the first piece of the puzzle that we talk about. I mean, while we don't want a student or a family to be scared by a sticker price of a college, gone are the days of trying to figure out how to pay for this college once you get your acceptance letter. Like, these early conversations about ability to pay, also willingness to pay. Just because a federal formula says you might be able to afford this doesn't mean the family has that willingness to pay that amount also.
Kevin, are we at the point where the question really does become for many students, should I go or should I not go because it's going to be too expensive no matter where I go?
Whether or not to go to college, I think most people can agree that some form of post-secondary education is important. But rather than look at and be focused on the price of the college, again, it's what can I afford? What are my options for paying for school? And then what are my options for repaying the loans when I take them out? I spoke to a young lady a few weeks ago who she went to the financial aid office on a year-by-year basis to review the loans that she was getting, to review her repayment options. And her financial aid counselor was nearly in tears because he was so happy. And he was like, I wish more students would be as conscientious about their debt as you are, because they come to me right when they're graduating, kind of like, what do I do now, instead of following the process as they're continuing through school.
How difficult is the process at this point to go out and get loans, if that's what you want to do, to pay for college?
It's not very difficult at all. I mean, and some would argue that's part of the problem. I mean, you fill out your financial aid application, the free application for federal student aid, or FAFSA, and for certain private schools, the CSS profile. And you can have access to student loans. Lisa mentioned the parent loan, which is sometimes included in financial aid award letters, which is technically or legally okay, but I would almost argue morally bankrupt, because it's not giving a family an accurate picture. When the balance says zero, you know, the parent loan could be as high as $30,000. And there's a glitch in the system, because you could have, after filling out a FAFSA, you could have an EFC of zero, meaning your expected family contribution is zero. The government has determined from the information you put in the FAFSA that you have no ability to pay for school, yet you can get a PLUS loan in excess of $10,000, $15,000, $20,000.
Lisa, what are the considerations that come up to you most frequently when parents are talking about how they're going to pay for college? What do they look to first, or what should they be looking to help them pay for it?
I think what I end up feeling like in the beginning is like I'm a myth buster. I'm trying to help them to not believe the things that they hear. They'll often come in and say, well, why should I apply? I make too much money. Or I heard that there's absolutely no merit aid at any colleges across the country. Or I heard that if I save for college, it's going to hurt me in the financial aid formula. So there's a lot of those things that we have to break down first. I'm a firm advocate that everybody should fill out the FAFSA, because you never know what's going to happen down the road. We had a family once who basically came in and said, I think we can afford all 4 years of college. We're going to skip all of this. And sadly, something happened in the family. The student needed an emergency loan to stay enrolled in college, and they weren't in the system.
What about scholarships, Kevin? Are those are there enough of them out there where you could say, oh, don't worry, I'll go find the scholarship that'll pay for me to go to college?
Well, Lisa made a good point, because that's kind of another myth that's out there, that you know, you can pay for your entire education through scholarships. And while that may be true in certain instances, the average scholarship award, you're looking at anywhere from $500 to $2,000. What we usually tell students is you start local, start with your high school, start with your town, your community, your state, your region, and then look national, because the focus should be mostly on your classwork. You know, the operative word in scholarship is scholar. So the better your GPA is, the more likely you are to win certain scholarships. And if you spend all your time and energy in searching for scholarships and your grades slip, then that's really not an even trade.
So aren't we then going to end up, and maybe we already have, with people who are going to leave college with just a mountain of debt that's going to take them years, maybe decades to pay off?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the challenge with this, is encouraging people to seek out post-secondary educational opportunities, at the same time helping them understand the importance of being financially literate and being a wise consumer. I mean, maybe the conversation needs to shift to that and saying, look, you are about to make a huge purchase or a huge investment. Yeah. These are the things that you need to know in order to maximize the returns on that investment. Because colleges, if I were to have a crystal ball, aren't exactly probably going to reduce their price anytime soon. It's on consumers to make wise choices that best suit them and their situation.
Let's talk numbers, because there are a lot here. What is a reasonable amount of money to leave college with in debt at this point? Kevin, what do you think?
Well, you can go to college with a full ride and graduate with $27,000 worth of debt, because that full ride is going to include, most likely, student loans. And your loan limits are set each year, like $5,500 your first year, $6,500 your second year, and then $7,500 your third and fourth year, which totals $27,000. And that happens to be what roughly the average national student debt is for students leaving a four-year school.
$27,000.
Right.
But some people are going to have a lot more.
And it's all relative, because if you have a lot more, but then you go into public service and you combine that public service loan forgiveness with an income-driven repayment plan, then you can have the bulk of that loan forgiven based on your employment. So it's really, I think it all boils back down to understanding your options before you actually sign anything on the dotted line. And, you know, it's almost like having an exit strategy. You know how to get in the door, get in the building, but what's your plan for when you finish?
Lisa, what's a reasonable number, do you think?
Well, I know that I've always told families, whatever you think that you might be studying or want to do, whatever maybe your annual salary can be when you graduate, ideally that debt should be like half of what you think you'll make in your first year out of college.
Wow.
And I don't want them to be afraid, though. I don't really feel like all loans are bad. I wouldn't even have my career if I wasn't a student who took out loans. But I do feel like there's a loan debt crisis that is out there. But I also think some of the numbers that are published in a lot of online entities are a little bit overinflated, because they also include some debt from medical school, law school, that's kind of in those definitions. So I don't want families to be afraid of loans, but I agree with Kevin wholeheartedly. What's the plan? What does repayment mean? Does everyone understand the dangers of defaulting on a loan?
What is not being said about the college debt debate that should be said right now, Lisa?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think what needs to be discussed more is how these families, as early as maybe even sophomore year, can start going online and using the net price calculator for each college, so that they can look at things, not just the debt that we're hearing in the news, but what are the graduation rates at colleges? Are you getting your degree in 4 years, or is it going to be a 5 or 6 year graduation plan at that school? What a family profile might look like if they qualify, use that net price calculator on every college's website. All of those preventative steps are so crucial for families to know about.
Kevin, what's not being said that should be said?
Ultimately, I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, you talk to anybody who's 10, 15 years removed from school, and you ask them, if you left your job tomorrow and applied for a new job, are they going to ask you where you went to school? No, they're going to ask you, well, do you have a degree? They'll say, do you have a degree? But then it's not where you went to school. It's what are your skill set? How does your skills translate to this job that you're applying for? Where do you see yourself in 90 days after starting this new job? And do you see growth opportunity?
What I hear you saying there is maybe that public university is going to be a lot cheaper, a lot better deal than going and spending $60,000 a year on the private one that has a great brand name.
Right. Well, you know what's interesting? There's both sides to that, because I worked with a young lady several years ago who had a full ride to a state university, but got the guidance counselor suggested that they go to a private university because that was a better investment in her future. Conversely, I've seen cases where they had a merit award in excess of $15,000, $20,000, which made the private college less than the state university. So every situation is different, but when you have the knowledge to be able to look at those financial aid awards and discern which is going to be the right fit, just like you're looking at academic fit, which is the right financial fit, then you can make the decision that's best for you and going forward.
That's Kevin Fudge, a manager of government relations and community affairs for American Student Assistance. That's a nonprofit that helps families pay for college. And we've also been speaking with Lisa Maselli at the University of Illinois Laboratory High School. She's director of college counseling there in Urbana, Illinois. Lisa, Kevin, thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thanks, Jeremy.
And Lisa has given us some tips for families worried about college costs. You can find them at our website, hereandnow.org. Tomorrow, as we wrap up our series, we'll talk about potential solutions to this problem of student debt, which are starting to pop up on the campaign trail.
The fact that we're talking about this, that the presidential candidates are talking about it, that they've come out with detailed plans, that's huge. You know, that wasn't happening even just one presidential cycle ago.
That conversation tomorrow. And if you miss it on air, you can catch it and all our conversations about student debt at hereandnow.org, where we'd love to hear from you about your experience paying for college.